Hey, Jeannie.
Hello, John R. How you doing today?
I'm all right, my dear. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, and I am just absolutely thrilled to be, down here at the Musicians Institute in downtown Hollywood doing a live show with you, broadcasting bluepower.com, and we have a very special guest again today. John, you want to tell him who it is?
Yeah, we got Mr. Walter Trout. We've been trying to get Walter since April of last year. And we finally got him in here. He braved the freeways, coming all the way from Huntington Beach.
Huntington Beach?
You believe that, Jeannie?
I don't know. I've heard some masochists before, but that's the ultimate. What is that true, Walter? Huntington Beach? How was the traffic?
Traffic was okay. Wasn't bad.
Wasn't bad? Okay, well, then I'm not going to feel so sorry for you.
And they were here right on time, I guarantee. Marie came with him. Hi, Marie. All right, listen. We're going to crossfade out of this and go right into the Silvertone recording of Mr. Walter Trout. I can tell.
I'm glad someone can.
Hurt me.
I'm
him.
Hoo-wee! My God, you talk about a long and dramatic ending. I like that. It's one of those kind of things where you hang on the lip of the concert stage and go, "You rock!"
Well, you know, we like to say in my band that most of our endings are longer than most people's songs.
Well, that's good. There's nothing like a hit ending, is there?
Walter, that was I Can Tell. You said you cut that live in the studio.
Yeah.
No overdubs.
No overdubs. That's just us going for it.
What were you using? What kind of amp? And
I was using a Mesa Boogie Mark III.
Yeah.
On there, and a Fender Stratocaster, and the Mesa Boogie is just cranked up.
Yeah.
Basically, there's no pedals or effects or
miking
anything.
It through what, a 57 or just
now you're getting technical on me.
Come on, everybody wants to know. Engineering minds want
probably to know. Probably a 57.
Yeah.
Just a 57 down in front of it, and probably one back in the room a ways, you know.
Yeah.
It sure sounds good. That's on Silvertone Records, huh?
Yes.
I understand you had some problems with Silvertone.
Well, I didn't have a real great experience with them. I went into an agreement with them with a lot of high hopes, and they made an awful lot of promises and kind of made me feel great when I signed with them, and then they just sort of turned their back on me. And to make a long story short, it wasn't a real good experience, and I was really glad to get out of that contract.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You went from there to Pro Vogue, was it?
I went from Elektra to Pro Vogue. From Pro Vogue, I went to Silvertone, and then I went to Silvertone and said, "Let me out of this deal," and I went back to Pro Vogue.
Ah, you like Pro Vogue?
They did a great job for me for a long time, yeah.
You always spoke very highly of them.
Yeah, I'm actually with a different label now.
With Roof now, right?
With Roof, and they're doing a tremendous job for me.
Yeah.
I have to say, they are really the only record company I've ever been on that makes you promises and then actually follows through on the promises.
How amazing.
Which is an incredible thing in this world.
Yeah, especially in the music business.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
I was looking at your biography, Walter, and it says here that you're from Ocean City, New Jersey.
Oceanside, right? Was it Ocean
City? Ocean City.
Ocean City. Not to be confused with Ocean City, Maryland. And that in the early 60s, you heard Mike Bloomfield's in Paul Butterfield's band, and what did that inspire you? Is that what started you, or is that how you got introduced with blues, or how did you get hooked up with the blues?
I'll tell you, I was very lucky in that I grew up in a home where I had two parents and an older brother who were all musical aficionados, and they were very hip to lots of different kind of music. And I heard blues around my house growing up, but I never heard anybody play blues guitar with the kind of passion and fire that Bloomfield did on that album.
Sure.
And at that time...
Which album?
The very first Paul Butterfield Blues Band album, which was released, I believe, in about 65.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I was listening... to the Beatles and the Stones and all the stuff that kids of that era listened to.
Hang on, Sloopy, hang on.
Yeah,
those kind of things.
And when this album came out with that guy playing guitar on it, it was revolutionary. There was nobody playing like that at that time.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. I knew on that day that I heard that record, I knew what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
So that was the particular burning bush that said, "You, Walter Trout, are going to be a blues man."
Yep, that was it. And that was also the day, I think, that my parents wished that my older brother had not brought that record home.
Well, were you already playing guitar by then, or had you?
Yeah, I was, strumming chords and playing folk songs at parties, doing Michael Rowe, The Boat Ashore, and
Puff the Magic Dragon,
Chad Mitchell Trio songs.
Oh, man.
I loved Chad Mitchell Trio.
When it stood still.
Yeah, with Chad Mitchell.
I like the Kingston Trio. I thought they were there were green alligators. Yeah. No, never mind.
Chad Mitchell was a great singer.
Yeah,
he really was. And if the poor man hadn't have gotten arrested and put in prison, I think they could have gone on
to a lot. What was he arrested for?
For I believe it was for selling marijuana.
No, you're kidding. I promoted him on Mercury.
Really?
On
Mercury. You promoted marijuana.
Chad Mitchell Trio.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
You know, when he got arrested and he was replaced by the young, unknown John Denver.
My God.
And that was John Denver's first real gig, was as the lead singer of the Chad Mitchell Trio, minus Chad Mitchell.
Well, you're going to love this. Yesterday, I'm on the freeway, right? I'm driving, and I go by, come up behind a white van, and the van plate says G-Y-A-R-B-R-O, and it was Glenn Yarbrough from the Limelighters.
Wow.
Do you remember that?
Oh, sure.
And the only reason I know that for sure is because I did a record on him at Hollywood Central years ago, and he's a great tenor.
Oh, yeah.
He really is.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just had to point out one thing. Okay, one of my heroes, my brother's heroes of all time, is John Mayall. And in addition to Walter here having worked with John Lee Hooker and Big Mama Thornton, you spent five years with the Blues Breakers.
Yes, I did.
Candy. Now, John Mayall is one of these people who's famous for the guitar players that he's worked with, amongst which would be Eric Clapton, and of course Walter Trout. So, what was it like being on the road with John Mayall?
I had a blast in that band. I had a great time. And I think most musicians that you will find who have gone through his band, if you talk to them, they will probably tell you that that was the most fun experience of their musical career.
Wow.
We were taken care of. We were treated great. He lets you play every night. He's just a great man to work for, and I had a blast. It was a very difficult decision for me to decide to leave his band and go solo on my own. That was a big gamble because I was having a great time, you know.
He spoke very highly of you.
Yeah.
And so did Fito De La Parra.
Okay, good.
Both of them spoke very highly of you.
Right.
Great deal of respect there.
Yeah, I had a great time in Canned Heat, too, I think. My problem is I can't remember much of it.
Oh, like most. How many years ago was that?
I joined them in like 1980, and I stayed with them to 84, and then I joined Mayall and stayed with him to 89, and then I went on my own.
Wow. So you were actually with the two of them, you know, about 8 or 9 years.
Yeah, almost 10 years. Yeah.
But you got a lot of good experience, huh?
Yeah. I had a very good time, I think.
I think.
From what little you can remember.
Well, yeah. I tell you, let's play another cut. I want to play one of my favorites, which is one of your tunings. And I love your tunings. And as a matter of fact, I had several people write in when I put up on the website on Blue Power that you were coming. And they said, would you please have him explain some tunings? Because he does a lot of tunings. But I'd like to play Watch Her Dance. And let me see. I believe that's it right there, Jeanette. So if you play that, we'll get out of here and listen to Watch Her Dance. And then we'll explain the tuning. Okay? We'll get into that. Go ahead, Jeanette.
Watch Her Dance.
Roll it.
Whenever she gets a chance, she's going to dance.
It's cut number 11.
Hold me close, tiny dancer. I'm sorry, guys. It's what you call stalling for time.
There we go.
All right, Watch Her Dance. Walter Trout, and obviously, what, an open tuning that you're using?
Is it? Yeah, it's a very strange tuning.
Is it like E-based, D-based? What's your predominant? What's the?
It's out of an E, but there's no third in the chord. The whole chord is E's and B's.
Uh-huh.
It's the first and the fifth of the chord.
So there's no third.
There's no third. So you can make it major or minor depending on
how you bar it. I'll be darned.
While they're figuring this out, if you want, I'll explain a little
more.
Yeah,
do it.
How I found this tuning was... and
teach it to me. Teach it to me. Teach me the tuning. All right.
Do you want
all
me
right,
to?
I'm taking at the Musicians Institute appropriately. We are learning open tunings a la Walter Trout.
From the high E string, you're going to go E, B. They're the same. Now the G string, you're going to go all the way down to an E. Down. So you get this.
Sounds almost Celtic.
Now the D string, you're going to come up to an E. So you have a drone. You have two E's. The A string, up to B.
Up to B. Okay.
you get...
Oh, I love it.
That is cool.
All right, list the strings out. So you do the E, it stays the same.
The high E stays the same. The B stays the same.
All right.
The G and the D are both tuned to E, and they're the same note. Then the A string goes up to B, and the bass E string stays the same.
That is cool.
Oh, man, that is so cool. We got that CD up, Jeanette. Let's listen to this, and now we can hear this tuning put into action.
Watch
your
dance. It puts things in a new light.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Is anything working here?
Hello.
There we go.
Wow, Watcher Dance, that is such great production, what with the bongos and the acoustic and then bursting into full Pole production there. That's a great song.
You know, I haven't heard that in a while, and I have to say it sounded pretty good to me, too.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been a couple of years.
Song.
Where'd you record that?
I did that at Soundcastle Studios here in L.A.
Okay.
And I produced that one myself. And it was the only time I've produced one of my own albums. It was to see if I could do it. And that sounded good, man.
Great.
It's been a long time since I heard that one.
Yeah, I always loved that. I don't know why. Maybe it takes me back to the Jethro Tull days. It kind of that Fat Man. Do you remember that cut off the Stand Up album, the one where you opened the album, the Jethro Tull, and the thing popped open in the middle? It's called Stand Up. I don't want to be a fat man. People would say that I'm just good fun. Jethro, he used a lot of tunings, too. Whoever the guitar player was in Jethro Tull, he used a lot of open tunings.
Martin Barr.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent. Very nice. How many different tunings do you use, I mean, in the course of an evening or a concert?
You know, when I play live with my band, I pretty much just use my Strat these days and play in concert tuning. There's one song I do that the tuning is, I take the A string down to G.
Yeah.
I take the bass E string down to a D.
Mm-hmm.
And then I play the song out of a G. And what you get then is, just by putting your finger on the third fret high E string, you can strum and you get a G chord, and you can kind of play all these licks out of G, and you get the drone of the bass strings going at the same time, you know. But the story behind that tuning on that song was that back in 1970, I guess, I had a little career going in New Jersey singing radio and television commercials. And we used to do these commercials in New York City in a little studio there. With a guy named Ed Kaloff, who still, Ed Kaloff is now doing, like, he writes the music for NBC News and stuff. You'll see his name there. But he had a studio, and he was doing these commercials, and I was a singer. And we were in the studio, and he was talking on the phone, and I heard him say to a guy, well, I'm talking with Steven Stills. And I said, man, ask him what the tuning is he uses on 4 and 20, and on Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. And he called out the notes to me, and I actually, via the telephone, learned that tune.
Learned that tune.
Steven Stills.
Excellent. That's a marvelous story. Yes. Yeah,
are you going to be going to the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young concert coming up this weekend?
No, I'm going to be gigging this weekend, being that professional musician that I am.
And where are you going to be playing Sir Walter?
Where are we going to be? This thing is Tumbleweeds in Huntington Beach, and the week after that, Ventura Theater. I'll be at the Ventura Theater.
I love that theater. With your band?
With my band on the 19th.
Uh-huh. How long, and your band is what, Sharp, Walter, Bernie, and Paul? Is that what that is, a Sharp or Pound?
That's a Pound sign.
Okay, Pound. Our artist formerly known as James Trapp, is called Pound now?
It's called Pound sign.
Uh-huh.
Maybe later we'll play his message where he declared himself the Pound sign. I put it on my last CD.
Oh, did you? I'd love to hear it.
And I didn't tell him. It's a hidden track on there.
Oh, no. Does he know it yet?
Oh, yeah. Right, he knows it, yeah.
It's on the new one? On the new
CD? It's on Living Every Day. It's on the end.
Oh, we'll find that.
Okay.
We'll find that.
Okay.
How long have you been playing with Walter, Bernie, and Paul?
Actually, the Pound sign and I have played together for off and on for 22 years. We played in some club bands together, and when I went solo, I called him up, and he's been on every CD I've done.
Wow.
And
what does he play?
He plays bass.
Bass. Mm-hmm.
And Bernie, the drummer, mm-hmm. of the 9 CDs I've done, he's on, I think, 5 of them.
Wow.
He was with me for 4 years, and he had to take a break because he had a heart condition, and he had to stop playing for 2 years.
Wow.
And the doctors worked on him and gave him drugs and had him doing exercises and changed his diet, and he was declared okay to play again, and he came back to the band about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing now as strong as ever. He's a really strong drummer.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he is a powerful drummer to watch him play.
And Paul plays keyboards?
Paul plays Hammond
B3. Hammond B3. Yeah. And now, is that the group that we just heard in that live recording in the studio?
That is the same group, except there's a different keyboard player mm-hmm. on that live in the studio.
Because that Hammond solo on that was just phenomenal.
That guy is now playing with Eric Burden. His name was Martin Gershwitz.
Excellent players. You always have good players. Mm-hmm. They have to be good.
Try to. You know, I want to get up there with them and be proud to be on stage with them, and also get a little boost from them being up there, you know.
Well, we have, actually, it was so nice to have Walter here today, and he was driven down by Marie, his wife. And there's a particular cut that I really love off the Walter Trout album. It's called Marie's Mood, mm-hmm. and it's an instrumental.
Yeah.
And could you give us a little history of that song, Walter?
Well, it was time in our life that I was supposed to be making a studio album. And around the time I started to decide to write this album, God decreed that my wife would become pregnant. And we already had one son at the time, and she became pregnant, and in her 17th week of the pregnancy, she basically went into labor and was having contractions, and we were losing the baby. And we were told that you're probably going to lose this kid, but the best thing you can do is, they made her lay on her back with her feet up in the air for like 6 months.
Oh my God.
And she was told, don't lift a dish, don't lift a fork, just lay on your back, and you're probably going to lose the kid. And you know, we to really get into it, she had an ultrasound and an examination, and she was already dilated 4 centimeters.
Wow.
which is unheard of.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And this doctor said, well, you're going to lose the kid, you know. And we said, what do we need to happen? He goes, you need the cervix to close, but it's not going to do it once it has opened up.
Yeah.
And a friend of ours came and said, you need to pray. Mm-hmm. And you need to be specific. You don't say to God, help me. You need to say, close the cervix. And we prayed, and he went to his church and had a prayer group pray. And we went back the next day, and her cervix had closed,
which
the doctor said was a complete miracle. But she still had to lay on her back, and she was still having contractions. And I basically tried to write a little guitar piece where my guitar could speak to her and say, as long as we keep our faith here, hopefully it's going to be okay. And it's really for her and our little son, Michael, who's just fine.
All right. Good story.
Excellent.
What's the name of the song again?
Marie's Mood.
Marie's Mood. Thank you. I don't know about you, John, but if I were Marie, my heart would have melted over that.
Absolutely.
Did that
Absolutely.
Do that to
no
you, Marie?
Doubt.
Yeah, that would help get me through at least one day of having to be flat on my back, but I don't know, 6 months.
Well, yeah, with the beautiful strains of Marie's mood, we're going to take this half of the show out, and we'll be back in 2 seconds. This is BluePower.com, and we'll be right back.